Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, host of Your Call. You're listening to the Project 2025 What's in It podcast, a special series from KALW Public Media about the far right's agenda outlined in what they're calling Project 2025 Mandate for Leadership, the Conservative Promise. This Heritage Foundation-led plan lays out a comprehensive agenda to transform the United States into a conservative Christian nation under Donald Trump. Project 2025 would dismantle the administrative state and ensure arch-conservative rule for decades to come. It would affect all aspects of life and would be implemented by expanding presidential powers and eliminating federal agencies. One note before we dig in. When this show originally aired live on KALW, we took calls and emails. If you have a comment or perspective to share, email us at project2025@kalw.org. Today, we continue our series on Project 2025 by discussing secret training videos obtained by ProPublica and documented. 14 hours of never-before-published videos come from the Presidential Administration Academy, which is training the next conservative administration's political appointees to be ready on day one. The videos were shared by someone who had access to them. The Heritage Foundation's president, Kevin Roberts, recently told MSNBC that their plan is to fire over 50,000 civil servants and replace them with MAGA loyalists. In the videos, Project 2025 advises those loyalists to scrub their social media accounts, go on conservative news outlets, and avoid creating a paper trail of sensitive information. In this video, Dan Huff, a former legal advisor in the White House Presidential Personnel Office under Donald Trump, says future appointees should be prepared to enact significant changes in American government and be ready to face blowback.
If the next Republican president does not execute a dramatic course correction, there may never be another chance. So if you're not on board with helping implement a dramatic course correction because you're afraid it'll damage your future employment prospects, it'll harm you socially, look, I get it. That's a real danger. It's a real thing. But please, do us all a favor and sit this one out.
In that video, that was Dan Huff, a former legal advisor in the White House Presidential Personnel Office under Trump. In this video, Bethany Kosma, a conservative activist and former deputy chief of staff at the United States Agency for International Development, USAID, in the Trump administration, downplays the seriousness of the climate crisis and says the movement to combat it is really part of a ploy to control people.
Climate change allegedly is everywhere. And if the American people elect a conservative president, his administration will have to eradicate climate change references from absolutely everywhere. And according to our intelligence community, the number one threat facing our country today is, drumroll, climate change. Not Russia, not China, not AI, climate change. This shows how the federal government is all in on this issue. And climate change activists wield a lot of power. This is an issue to pay attention to as it has infiltrated every part of the federal government. Now, when I think of climate change, I immediately think of population control, don't you? I think about the people who don't want you to have children because of the impact on the environment. Perhaps not everyone will make that connection, but after spending time in the international space trying to protect life, I can tell you that this is part of their ultimate goal, to control people.
That was Bethany Kosma, a conservative activist and former deputy chief of staff at the USAID. You can see all of the videos, some are short, but ProPublica and Documented posted all 14 hours. You can find them by reading the ProPublica piece. Find that at kalw.org, click news, and then Your Call. Joining us to talk about these secret training videos is Andy Kroll, an investigative reporter with ProPublica, a nonprofit news organization that exposes abuses of power. Hi, Andy. Thanks so much for your work, and thanks for joining us again.
Hey, thanks for having me, Rose. It's great to be back.
Great to have you back. So first off, you did reach out to the Heritage Foundation to ask questions about this, and they did not respond. Have they responded since this piece ran?
We have not heard from the Heritage Foundation's press office or any of its senior leadership since the piece ran. You know, at ProPublica, we have a ironclad policy, which we call no surprises journalism. Anyone that we write about, no matter the issue, no matter the end of the political or ideological spectrum, we reach out to before we publish a story, put everything in front of them and tell them to comment, tell us where we're wrong, what's not quite, you know, contextualized, and help us make the story better. We did that here. This was no different. Heritage HQ did not respond to us, but several of the people in the videos did. I spoke with them. They confirmed the authenticity of the videos, their participation in them, gave us a little more context in these videos. So these are very much the real article here, a genuine article. And they give us a really, you know, vital and previously unknown window into what Project 2025 is.
What struck you about the conversations you had with some of the people in these videos?
A few things struck me. One was the notion that these videos are part of a larger plan, Project 2025, that really is geared toward, from day one of a potential Trump administration in 2025, from day one, that administration being stocked with a vetted, trained political appointees, and that policy agenda, the one in the 887-page blueprint that Project 2025 put out and that you've talked about on this show, that policy blueprint can potentially be put into motion from day one. There really was a sense, this comes through in the videos and in some of the conversations I had, there really was a sense that, you know, people around Trump felt that they were unprepared for his victory in 2016. They did not have nearly the bench of possible government appointees that they could select from and put into these roles across the government, and that the administration suffered for that, that it was chaotic in the beginning. They didn't get much done. The things they tried to do got delayed or blocked because of sloppy work inside the administration. These training videos really are a recognition, and this is what the people who I spoke with also told me, really are a recognition that a successful administration is one that can start achieving what it wants to achieve from the very moment the president takes that oath of office at 12 noon on January 20th, 2025.
So as I said in the intro, these videos were shared by someone who had access to them, and they come from the Presidential Administration Academy. Even though we've done all of these shows on Project 2025, I've never heard of this before, but it is on the project2025.org website. And it says, the Presidential Administration Academy is a one-of-a-kind educational and skill-building program designed to prepare and equip future political appointees now to be ready on day one, as you said, Andy. This academy provides aspiring appointees with the insight, background knowledge, and expertise in governance to immediately begin rolling back destructive policy and advancing conservative ideas in the federal government. And then you can click on the Apply to Enroll Now button. So tell us more about, what do we need to know about this Presidential Administration Academy?
There's a saying that you hear a lot in politics. It's this concept that personnel is policy. This phrase really comes into circulation in the early years of the Reagan administration, actually, going back to the early 1980s. But it's something that is basically accepted wisdom across the political spectrum in Washington now. You'll hear people like Elizabeth Warren, the liberal senator from Massachusetts, say that personnel is policy. What that really means is that you could have all of these great out-of-the-box innovative ideas written down on paper, but they're only worth the paper that they're written on. They're only worth that and nothing more unless you have people in the federal government, in these different agencies, who have the know-how and the ability to put those policies into motion, to actually make them real. Project 2025, again, has gotten a ton of attention for the big policy blueprint that it put out and, frankly, the unpopularity of some of the major policies in that. For instance, closing the Department of Education, slashing Medicaid, restricting further restricting access to reproductive health care. Mifepristone obviously is in there. There is a policy in there as well to reclassify tens of thousands of government workers and be able to replace them with political loyalists. But again, these are all just words on a page. If you don't have thousands or tens of thousands of people who are up to speed on these policies, up to speed on how the government works, and can begin putting those things into action in the government once a future, again, hypothetical Trump administration takes over. So there's this whole other part of Project 2025 that amazingly hasn't gotten that much attention until now, and is really the sort of the focus of our story, that is really built around the personnel as policy idea and is focused on recruiting, vetting, and then training people using these videos. There are the videos that we published. There are worksheets. There are quizzes. There are different modules within the program. And if you complete a module, you get an actual sort of digital certificate. I've seen some of these before. But really, the whole point of this is to build up this list of names that if Donald Trump wins in November, these people can then be reached out to. They've gone through the training. They've been vetted. People aren't getting into this program who don't pass, you know, a certain vetting process, that these people can then be selected from to start staffing the new administration before it's even taken power. And that on day one, these people can go into government, be ready to go, know where they're going, and start implementing Donald Trump's policies right from the get-go.
Andy, the other thing that was so interesting about these videos is I stayed up pretty late last night watching the long-form videos. And people like Bethany Kozma, who was the former deputy chief of staff at USAID, this is a really important job. And then someone like Katie Sullivan, former acting assistant attorney general under Trump. I thought what was so interesting is you hear about the top level government officials, like the head of the Department of Defense or the Secretary of State. You don't really hear much about a Katie Sullivan. And Katie Sullivan and others really shared information about the day-to-day under Trump and what it was like for them to come into contact with these decades-long civil servants, people who work in government because they believe in what they do and they work in Democratic and Republican administrations. But these Trump loyalists talked a lot about how they didn't like the words that these civil servants used, the language they used. They didn't like how they went about doing their jobs. They talked about how they butted heads on a regular basis. And I thought that was just really interesting because you just don't hear these stories on a regular basis in the media. And so what they're wanting to do is replace these people that they disagree with, these decades-long government employees, with MAGA loyalists, so they're all on the same page. No more debate.
There are a few good points to make based on that very astute analysis you just gave of this particular part of the videos. And I appreciate you for going through the videos and taking the time to do that, because as you know, and as anyone who watches them knows, there's a lot in there. So one thing to remember is that being able to appoint political appointees is something that every president who goes into office gets to do. There are a certain number of jobs that turn over when the presidency turns over. It is the right of the president and his or her administration to fill those slots with people who will carry out their agenda. That is how the federal government works. And the civil servants who work around those appointees know that the priorities of their agency, their workplace, will change every 4 or 8 years based on the change at the very top. They're nonpartisan employees, they're civil servants. Often, you know, we're talking about people who are scientists at the EPA, mm-hmm. subject matter experts at the National Institutes of Health, lawyers at the Justice Department, surveyors and environmental engineers at the Department of the Interior, people who are not there because they are loyal to a party or a cause. They are there because they have given their whole life to studying, you know, climate change, or given their whole life to studying consumer safety. And it's important to know that, because it is not normal to hear appointees like the former Trump administration officials we hear in these videos talking in the way that they talk about these career civil servants. I mean, I've interviewed Republican appointees, Democratic appointees, and civil servants for almost 15 years being here in Washington. And everyone understands that you work with their civil servants because they help you get your job done. They're experts. They know how the place works. But in these videos, as you rightly pointed out, you know, there is an animus there. There is a sort of just implicit negativity that these speakers have toward the career government employees, people who I would add are by no means getting rich working in the federal government on whatever their issue is that they care about. They're doing it because they care about their issue. They want to serve their country. To hear, say, Bethany Kosma, one of the people in these videos, say that political appointees should expect to be persecuted. That's a quote from her. Persecuted is one thing. To hear another speaker in one of these videos say that Washington is hostile to basic traditional values, whatever that even means. To say that, you know, you should expect resistance and antagonism from the career employees the moment you step in the door. I really think that is just an unfair caricature, really, of the people who work in the government and do it because they care about the issue that they're working on. It's obviously painting them with such a broad brush in a way that just cannot be accurate to say that tens or hundreds of thousands of career employees are automatically not going to like the folks who come into the next conservative administration. So this is a recurring theme in the videos, almost sort of like a siege mentality that is being imparted from these speakers, again, to viewers of these videos. And those intended viewers are future political appointees in a possible next Trump administration.
Do you have any idea how many people have already been hired? And do you know much about the vetting process?
I don't know the number in terms of people who have been sort of brought through this training system. We tried to find that out in our story. It was really hard to get that information without any cooperation from the Heritage Foundation. You know, I've seen thousands who've gone through the training process mentioned in other news coverage. Those numbers weren't necessarily that up to date, you know, reporting from earlier this year. So it's a little bit hard to say. The vetting process, now that is more interesting. There has been some documentation leaked to the media. Axios, the news site here in Washington, has written a bit about this. And our own, you know, newsroom at ProPublica, a colleague of mine, Alec McGillis, has also written about this. And, you know, there are these questionnaires that Project 2025 has put out there. And the questionnaires do ask the kinds of things that you think would lead to a kind of ideological sorting. These are questions that are trying to get at someone's, again, ideological kind of core beliefs, their policy beliefs. It really seems like a detailed list of questions that are trying to filter out anyone who is, again, not even just not conservative, but someone who isn't like fully bought into the MAGA agenda. So for instance, some of these questions are, you know, what part of candidate Trump's campaign message most appealed to you and why? You know, have you ever appeared in the media to talk about candidate Trump? What books, political thinkers do you care about? So there's a clear attempt there to try to limit this list of people coming in the door to people who have shown, you know, a really strong amount of loyalty, certainly a support for Donald Trump, and definitely trying to weed out people who have seemed to have said anything negative about Donald Trump.
Today, we're spending the hour with Andy Kroll, an investigative reporter with ProPublica, a nonprofit news organization that exposes abuses of power. ProPublica and Documented got their hands on 14 hours of never before published videos from Project 2025's Presidential Administration Academy, which is training the next conservative administration's political appointees to be ready on day one. The videos were shared by someone who had access to them. The Heritage Foundation did not get back to ProPublica with questions about these videos. There are 23 in all, and you can find them at ProPublica.org. Also on ProPublica's YouTube page. If you have any questions or comments for Andy about what these videos reveal and really Project 2025 in general, Andy, it was very interesting to read the comments from people who watched these videos. It seems like a lot of people have actually watched the lengthy versions of the videos. People said that they were surreal. They used the word fascist. They used the word cult. I've also heard some people say that they expected these to be a bit more sophisticated. And I just wonder what your thoughts are on that. It almost seems like, were they scripted? Because some of the people seem a bit robotic.
Yeah, I think there's a lot going on in the videos. And from my read of them and the conversations I had with the few people who were in them, I think a few of those suspicions are true. There definitely seems to be some reading from a script. In fact, there are some videos where a speaker is talking and then a kind of title card comes up where the script is the text is the same as what the person is saying. So that would seem to suggest that, yes, they had a kind of a script or cue cards or some kind of written out text to dictate these videos. And the reactions, you know, have been fascinating to follow to these videos. I mean, first off, I would say that I think they've, you know, the total views of these videos have crossed at least 500,000 just in the on the ProPublica YouTube page of all the different videos. You know, I've heard from some people who said, yeah, the videos are kind of strange. You know, I thought that they would be much more highly produced, or that there would be more high profile people in the videos, which is an interesting reaction. I mean, there are a few prominent conservative activists and experts in there, but there are also people who, as you noted earlier, you know, worked several tiers down in the federal government in the Trump administration. But really, that's what makes them so interesting, is they have these lessons, they have this advice, these experiences that they impart in the videos that you just don't hear that often from someone who is an acting assistant attorney general in charge of, you know, this massive grant-making part of the Justice Department, the Office of Justice Programs. You just don't get that perspective very often. But also, these people are so important in implementing a president's agenda. They are the worker bees who move these policies on a day-to-day basis to get them from, again, words on a page to actual legal policy, a rule, a regulation, whatever. So it's a rare chance to hear the people who do the heavy lifting in government talk about what that's like and how to do it in a more efficient way, I guess you could say, the next time. You know, what else I would say from the videos? I mean, I learned some things watching these videos. Mm-hmm. There are some material in there that stuck out to me about just how the rulemaking process works, what a presidential transition is like, what's the difference between a landing team and a beachhead team. There is a lot of useful information in there for just understanding how this massive, massive institution, the U.S. federal government, actually works, the executive branch, how that works. So I thought that was quite interesting. And I think anyone who watches these videos, they will see things that they potentially agree with, things they will disagree with, but also stuff that isn't ideological or partisan, is just the nuts and bolts of how the government works on a day-to-day basis and how you get anything done when you're inside it.
To your point, Andy, I completely agree with you. I've been caregiving quite a bit, and I've been thinking a lot about how grateful I am that we now have Zoom for medical appointments, because I don't have to take the person I'm taking care of to the doctor. We can see the doctor on Zoom. I mean, it just saves so much time. And I've been thinking about, where did this come from? And I hope this is going to continue. It was fascinating to learn from Roger Severino in the video called Taking the Reins, How Conservatives Can Win the Regulations Game. So Severino is vice president for domestic policy at the Heritage Foundation and was former director of the Office of Civil Rights in the Department of Health and Human Services during the Trump administration. And he said during COVID, they figured out how to make Zoom work for medical appointments.
That's right.
I had no idea. So it was, like you said, it was so interesting to learn that.
Yeah, I mean, that video alone is a fascinating one. Roger Severino, a VP at the Heritage Foundation now, he was the director of the Office of Civil Rights at the Health and Human Services Department during Trump's presidency. A really, really critical, influential office within a really, really critical, influential agency. He's also someone who is a longtime leader of the anti-abortion movement, very visible in that and those efforts before the Trump administration. So, you know, he's bringing that kind of worldview to this advice. But also in the video, he's just talking about how the rulemaking process works and what you do in a time of emergency like the COVID pandemic and how you get things done more quickly. I think someone who is more on the left of the ideological spectrum and on the right, they could watch his video and they could each take away lessons about how to better accomplish whatever it is they want to accomplish, whether they agree with him on particular policies or not. And there's a lot of that in the videos. But again, there's also specific policy moments where Bethany Kosma, for instance, says we have to eradicate climate change references. In the same video, she is talking about what she calls left-wing code words for abortion, like reproductive health, sexual health. And in the process of discussing those words, she refers to abortion as quote-unquote murder. Mm-hmm. So there are also very stark policy statements in these videos as well that give us a sense of what these kinds of people might do and the kinds of views they have if they are part of a future Trump administration.
We're going to take a quick break today. We're joined by Andy Kroll, investigative reporter with ProPublica, a nonprofit news organization that exposes abuses of power. ProPublica and Documented got their hands on 14 hours of never-before-published videos from Project 2025's Presidential Administration Academy, which is training the next conservative administration's political appointees to be ready on day one. The videos were shared by someone who had access to them. And you can see all of the videos at ProPublica's YouTube page. We've got a link on our website, kalw.org. Click news and then your call. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. Today, we continue our series on Project 2025 by discussing secret training videos obtained by ProPublica and Documented. Today, we're joined by Andy Kroll, an investigative reporter for ProPublica. ProPublica and Documented have published these videos, 14 hours of never-before-published videos. Let's play another one. In this video, Stephen Bradbury explains the process of writing and implementing executive orders, drawing on experience from the Trump presidency. Stephen Bradbury is a fellow at the Heritage Foundation and a former counsel in the Department of Transportation during the Trump administration.
Now, President Biden has made even more robust use of executive orders, probably than President Trump. He's certainly on track to do that. Issued 48 in the first 100 days, again, using them as mouthpieces, as soapboxes, if you will, for PR purposes, but also really to put in motion in a very coordinated way a lot of his policy emphasis on climate change, on DEI, on environmental justice, racial equity. These are the policy priorities for the Biden administration, and you see those in his executive orders. And then he's directing his agency and department heads to carry out those policies, and they are doing it, I'm telling you, in a very active way. It is very regimented and organized across the executive branch to try to implement through guidance documents, rulemaking actions, departmental orders down within the layers of the executive branch, all of these Biden administration policies and goals. So the next conservative administration will have a big job to take a careful look at all of those and unwind a lot of those policies that are not consistent with a conservative approach to governing. That will be a huge job. That's one of the main reasons why Project 2025 is focusing so much in our Pillar 4 on creating detailed playbooks and plans for departments and agencies to implement the conservative policies that are set out in our Pillar One policy book and the directives that the new conservative president, we can hope in 2025, will issue in the form of executive orders. So there's going to be a great amount of work for a new administration to do in this area. It's very important to understand what executive orders are, what they can do, what they cannot do, how they're used, and how they can be revoked, how everything that follows from them can be taken a second look at and unwound if necessary.
That is Stephen Bradbury, a fellow at the Heritage Foundation and former counsel in the Department of Transportation during the Trump administration. Poynter had a piece last month called "Biden So Far Has Signed Fewer Executive Orders Than Trump." CNN's Caitlin Collins had to fact-check one of her guests during an interview, pointing out that Trump signed 220 executive orders during his 4 years in office, while Biden is at 139 so far in his term. What really strikes you, Andy, about that clip and Project 2025's plans for executive orders? Because they do want to give the next president more power.
Three things stand out to me, from that clip. So the first one is the, again, nuts and bolts, basic mechanics, practical tips on what an executive order is, how it works, how you sign one, you know, bring it into being, how you repeal them. And, you know, the full clip, you can get more detail on, you know, how to do that in such a way that you won't run into either legal trouble or you haven't done it in a sloppy manner that could lead to some kind of problems down the road. So again, useful, if you will, practical tips for future political appointees and just a baseline 101 education of what this is. I think it's revealing to hear Stephen Bradbury talk about how, one of the priorities for a conservative administration will be to go in and try to unwind as many Biden executive orders as possible. That's not necessarily a revelation. This kind of thing happens often when the presidency changes parties. You'll have the new president going back and trying to unwind some of what the previous president did. And there are other videos like the sort of liberal code word video, Monsters in the Attic, where Katie Sullivan, the former Justice Department official, talks about getting rid of, actually using that word eradicate again, executive actions having to do with gender and racial equality and equity. So this is clearly a recurring theme, rolling back the previous administration's actions. But really the last part of what Bradbury said there in that video, I think, is what makes Project 2025 so interesting, is that it's not just the big policy blueprint, the 887-page document that you've talked about before on this show. It's not just the training program that we are reporting on in this story and everything entailed there, but they have also put together actual playbooks, not just for the White House, but for every major federal agency. Playbooks that talk about what to do in the first 100 days, what to do in the first year, what executive orders to put in place, what kinds of executive actions to get rid of, how to actually hit the ground running from day one, written down, ready to go for the potential changeover in a presidency come January of next year. Again, that shows the level of planning, preparation, research, the amount of time, the amount of money that has gone into Project 2025. They really have thought of everything, except, of course, the sort of strategy and how they rolled this thing out, which is a whole other conversation. But they've really thought of everything to avoid the mistakes of the first Trump administration, where, again, that transition period in those first few months, the first year, were marred by confusion and chaos and inefficiency.
The other thing that was striking to me, not surprising, but the majority of the people in these videos are white men, not all, but the majority, and they spend quite a bit of time talking about DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, and they talk about racial justice and Biden policies affecting race. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's a good point that you make about the nature of the speakers and the content of what they're saying. Some of this stuff is not surprising to hear. Katie Sullivan, who is white, the former justice official, you know, talks about removing the quote-unquote noxious tenets of critical race theory. You know, it's in a conversation about sort of elementary and secondary education, which is a little weird because if you're actually talking about critical race theory, that's really a higher education thing, something, you know, colleges and universities may bring to students. You may study, you may read about, but not like sixth graders. So it's a little confusing, but you definitely hear that there. And you hear it in that video with Dan Huff, the fellow who you played the clip of earlier, talking about, you know, that you've got to be ready for a dramatic course correction if you want to join this administration, prepare for some blowback. He also has a sort of classic MAGA style line about DEI and how DEI is eroding or sort of destroying the character of the United States. It's pretty dramatic stuff. Again, what he says, it's really these issues of whether it's critical race theory, whether it's equity, diversity and inclusion, gender equality, racial equality, they really have become culture war talking points for the kind of people who will work in a next Trump administration. But I think they've had enough time, this core of people who maybe worked for him the first time would work for him again. They've had enough time, I think, to figure out what you could actually do in the federal government more than just talk about how awful DEI is or critical race theory is, what you could actually do with the levers of power to try to go on attack against those concepts, against those kinds of policies like gender and racial equity. So it won't just be talk if there is a second Trump administration, based on all of the evidence, based on all of the reporting we've done. They will put that talk into action across the federal government and reaching out into the rest of America if they get the chance to and get another 4 years.
Andy Kroll is an investigative reporter with ProPublica. Today on Your Call, we continue our series on Project 2025 by discussing secret training videos obtained by ProPublica and documented. There's 14 hours of never-before-published videos that were shared by someone who had access to them. Let's hear from John in Berkeley. Hi, John. Thank you for holding.
Oh, thank you both for all your work. I am a historian, and I think we need to recognize that the basic thought that they say conservative is a lie. They are reactionary. They're not conserving. They're trying to destroy. And it is essentially a fascist seizure of power. And I would like your comments on that, but don't say conservative. I know conservatives. Conservatives is to conserve. They want to destroy, seize power. Once they win an election, they'll never give it up or dispute it.
Well, thank you for the call, John. We actually got an email about language from a listener yesterday. We hear from listeners pretty regularly about this, Andy, that we shouldn't say conservative because this is a very different brand of, I just guess it depends on what you want to call it. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, as I'll say a couple of things, and I appreciate the call, John, and appreciate your observations on this. And, you know, as a journalist, as a writer, obviously, I care a lot about the language that we use and that language being accurate and remaining accurate. I think that if you look at the Project 2025 blueprint, I think there are a lot of things in there that would align with or fall under the header of conservative, especially a kind of the deregulatory agenda that's laid out in the blueprint. And also that comes through in the advice in the videos that we published. There is a very clear emphasis there on deregulation. But I would also say that one interesting moment in the videos comes when a leader of Project 2025, an associate director for the project named Spencer Tredian, he sort of answers a question that he thinks his audience might have if they could speak with him. This notion that, well, we're conservatives. If we're conservatives and we believe in limited government, why do we want to fill all of these political appointee government jobs? Why do we want to have as many people as we can in the federal government using the levers of power in federal government to accomplish certain things? Shouldn't we just leave the jobs empty or find ways to just cut them and dramatically scale back the headcount of the federal government? And what Tredian, this Project 2025 official, says in response basically is, no, that's not right. It's much more important for the conservative movement to put as many people in government as it can and have those people use the power that comes with their positions to enact conservative policies. It's an argument, in short, for wielding the power, the might of the federal government to accomplish certain things. And some of those, you know, again, are not shrinking government, but growing government. That's a pretty revealing answer, I thought. And, you know, if that's what he believes, then that's what he believes. It does obviously cause us to think a little bit harder and start to have a conversation, at least in our newsroom, about, okay, yeah, is this conservatism as we once knew it? You know, another great example of that is a couple of years ago, I think it was sometime in the last few years, the Heritage Foundation, the leading organization behind Project 2025, came out and basically said that the notion that free markets and free enterprise are essential to a thriving United States, are essential to freedom and a functioning country, that belief is no longer the case. That the Heritage Foundation, which again, sort of came to prominence during the Reagan years, the height of, you know, free market, limited government conservatism, the conservatism that John is probably talking about when he spoke to us just a second ago. I mean, Heritage has essentially said, we don't stand behind that anymore. We don't believe that free markets are nearly as important as they used to be. That is a pretty dramatic change. And I think we have to be very careful and very meticulous when we start revisiting terms like conservative and choosing whether to use them or not for something like Project 2025. But rest assured to John, to anyone listening, you know, we're always having these conversations at ProPublica. We're always trying to carefully think about, are we using the right language here? Are we being accurate in the way we describe the people we write about as those people change and as the things they say evolve in the way they clearly have in the case of the Heritage Foundation?
Hmm. Well, thank you so much for the call, John. We're also having those conversations here. In fact, when we put our logo together for this series, we thought, far right, ultra right, conservative, how do you describe this? It's a really important question. So thank you for calling in. Let's play one more video. I think this one is so interesting because I think the vast majority of people in this country want to deal with government waste. And we're going to hear from Max Primorac. What's really interesting about this video is you're shaking your head yes, but then you have to wonder, well, what does he mean exactly? So this is a video that's titled The Political Appointee's Survival Guide. Max Primorac is a former deputy administration at USAID during the Trump administration. He warns viewers that Washington is a place that does not share your conservative values and that new hires will find that there's so much hostility to basic traditional values.
Now, in terms of a tip, survival tip, do not let career bureaucrats hinder you from advancing the president's agenda. Keep in mind, you're coming into a place, Washington, D.C., that does not share your conservative values. They're even hostile to it because you're here to do something that's not in their interest. They're not going to be your friend and they're not going to help you succeed. What are you doing? You're here to cut government. You're here to cut spending. You're here to cut regulations. You're here to stop the waste, fraud, and abuse that's going on. But a lot of careers have been made from that. A lot of money has been made from that. fiefdoms have been built around it. So you're going to get a lot of opposition here. It's an entire industry of opposition from lobbyists, professional associations, contractor groups, and disappointingly, faith-based organizations.
That's Max Primorac, a former deputy administrator at USAID during the Trump administration. This one's pretty interesting, Andy, because a lot of people agree. Government waste, fraud, and abuse should be dealt with. The question is, how will they go about doing that?
I agree with a lot of what that gentleman says in that video. I've been in Washington as a journalist long enough to know that there is absolutely waste, fraud, and abuse across the federal government. That's why there are inspectors general in all of the agencies to try to root out that waste, fraud, and abuse and to try to make the government work better for the taxpayers it serves, to make it more efficient. That's why there are not enough, but scores of investigative journalists like myself, whose job includes keeping an eye on the federal government and trying to act as watchdogs for the public. But you got to understand a couple of things in addition to those sort of first principles, if you will, both in this video and also in the context, larger context of Project 2025. First, he says, you know, waste, fraud, and abuse, you're going in, you're going to work on that. You're going to be, you know, challenged by career employees. They're going to fight you every way, every which way that you try to tackle these core issues. You know, that's, I mean, he's painting tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people with the same broad brush, as if they are all part of the problem, creating this, again, sort of us versus them mentality for political appointees who would go into a future Trump administration. And that's just not true. There are countless, I mean, there's so many innumerable government employees who also want government to work well. Some of them work for an agency like the Government Accountability Office, or they work for an inspector general whose whole job is to make the government work better. So to say that they're all going to be on the other team or they're all going to be antagonistic, I think does a disservice to a lot of really hardworking career nonpartisan employees out there. So that's one. You know, and then if you think about the larger context here, think about the Schedule F reform plan that is in the Project 2025 policy blueprint. This is a plan, I imagine you maybe have talked about it on this show even before, in which a future conservative administration, a future Trump administration, would reclassify as many as 50,000 career civil servants. And by reclassifying them, their sort of employment status, they would become easier to be fired by the administration in charge. And then after they've been fired, more loyal political appointees can be hired to fill those openings. And again, this is a way of making the federal workforce, what some conservatives call the deep state, more loyal to a sitting conservative president. Now, that is not a recipe for making government more efficient. It's a recipe for making government much more politicized. And you have to think about the people who might be reclassified and fired, the career people in that plan. You know, we're talking about people who are scientists at the Environmental Protection Agency. We're talking about people who are lawyers at the Department of Health and Human Services. Again, these people I've mentioned before, who are nonpartisan, long-serving subject matter experts, policy experts, people who just want to work on the issue, the agency that they care about. You're going to fire them. You're going to lose all of that expertise. You're going to lose all of that accumulated experience and wisdom from decades of service for some of these people and replace them with new political appointees. I don't think there is a world in which that is a recipe for more efficient government. It's definitely a recipe for more politicized government.
We're going to give the final question to Harriet, who writes, I cannot believe that Project 2025 is reserved only for a possible Trump administration. Should he lose, why would the next Republican administration not revive and adjust the plan? I don't mean to be a pessimist, but if the GOP loses, we are by no means free of 2025. I'm sorry, yeah, Project 2025. Your thoughts, Andy?
I think Harriet's right. There is no reason to think that Project 2025 is reserved only for a conservative president, a future Donald Trump presidency, come January of 2025. I do think the unpopularity of Project 2025 might scare away future conservative Republican presidential aspirants. I think they've seen how this year's drama has played out, all the controversy and the horrible polling around what's in Project 2025. They may shy away from it, but I don't know if that means they'll shy away from the policy so much as the way in which Project 2025 was introduced to the American public. That clearly backfired in a major way, but I don't necessarily think that that means we won't see this kind of planning, this kind of playbook and blueprint in the future. I think Harriet is absolutely right to think that this could very well be the case for Project 2029 and on.
And just quickly, it can also be implemented at the state level. In some cases, some of these plans already are. Going back to the clip that we played by Bethany Kozma saying that we've got to just get rid of the term climate change. I'm reading now from a May article in the Tallahassee Democrat. Florida Governor DeSantis erases climate change references from state law before hurricane season. So this is so exhaustive, Andy. It's not like it's going in the dustbin. This could be embraced, and in some cases is being embraced by Republicans across the country at the state level.
I'm glad you brought that up because, yes, if you want a vision of what some parts of Project 2025 look like actually in action, go look at Florida. Go look at other Republican-controlled states and see how well it's working out for a state in Florida that is really the canary in the coal mine for the rest of the country when it comes to the climate crisis, and how well it's working out down there to erase any mention of climate change from the state government apparatus. It doesn't seem to be serving them well right now.
Andy Kroll is an investigative reporter with ProPublica. They published secret training videos from Project 2025 along with Documented. Andy, as always, thank you for your important work and thank you for joining us.
Thanks for all the time, Rose. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. And you can learn more about all of the articles and the information that we shared today by going to kalw.org. Thank you for joining us. Tune in next Monday to learn more about what exactly is in the far right's 900-page authoritarian playbook, Project 2025. I'm Rose Aguilar. This is KALW, San Francisco Bay Area.